College Basketball Insider.
Some news and notes from around the world of college basketball.
In-studio correspondent for WFAN and CBS Sports Radio.
Attention, please, to John Rothstein. Please report to St. Joe's.
The Insider's Insider.
Joining us now with his thoughts and to break it down, John Rothstein.
It's College Hoops Today with John Rothstein.
Let's put the women and children to bed and go looking for dinner. This is the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein, coming to you 52 weeks of the year, the only college basketball podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Later in this show, I will be joined by Minnesota head coach Richard Pitino as we dissect, digest, and offer some perspective on the Big Ten, as this is our off-season edition of our Big Ten Focus, and we will give you everything you need in this podcast from soup to nuts on the Big Ten Conference. Want to remind you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast on iTunes. We want to be your Bible for the college basketball season and beyond. Once again, we are the only college basketball podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also, want you to check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a review. Let us know what you think the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And also, send me your Big Ten related questions on Twitter. I'll get to them later in this podcast. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. Today's episode of the College Hoops Today podcast is brought to you by Geico. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. Geico has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money. Now that we've got you all set up for Geico, what do we see in the crystal ball as we look into the Big Ten Conference heading into the 17-18 season? For me, it's real simple. Everybody is chasing Michigan State. Michigan State, to me, is on another island compared to everybody else in the Big Ten because this is a league in transition. Indiana has a new coach in Archie Miller. Ohio State has a new coach in Chris Holtmann. And Wisconsin, a team that went to the Sweet 16 last year and lost to Florida, will have to replace four starters this season. Bronson Koenig, Vito Brown, Zach Showalter and Nigel Hayes have all exhausted all of their eligibility, so you've got a new era starting at Wisconsin. Those three blue bloods right now entering a new cycle in college basketball, and you'll see teams like Northwestern and Minnesota pick to be at the top of the league. And to me, Northwestern is loaded on paper. But what about the home court advantage? Northwestern last year, 14 of its 24 victories in a season where for the first time in school history it made the NCAA tournament came at Welsh Ryan Arena. Welsh Ryan Arena right now is going under construction and renovations, which means that Northwestern will now play its home games 16.6 miles away from campus at the Allstate Arena in Chicago. How will that affect the Wildcats? No true home court advantage, no on-campus home court advantage. These are the things to think about in terms of Big Ten storylines as the narrative remains simple. Everybody is chasing Michigan State. Now, obviously, one team that has a chance to potentially catch Michigan State this year in the Big Ten is Minnesota, and the head coach of the Golden Gophers, Richard Pitino, joins the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein coming up next. Welcome back to the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein as we continue with our Big Ten off-season edition of our podcast. And right now, we'd like to welcome to the show, making his inaugural appearance on the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein, the head coach of Minnesota, Richard Pitino. And coach, how much difference has a year made for you and your program compared to how you feel now versus last July?
Well, on the outside, it feels great. You know, we always did feel that we could really turn the corner in year four, just with the way the team was built. We just thought we had all the tools. We were going to get older. You know, it's tough to be young in our conference. And when you take a new job, you're trying to find a way to balance the classes out to where you don't do that. And we had to get young in my third year and kind of had to go through it a little bit. And as difficult as it was for everybody, I'm not sure we would have been as good as we were if guys like Nate Mason, Jordan Murphy, Dupree McBrayer, if they didn't have that experience from the year before, I don't think they would have been able to do what they did. So as tough as it was good for us. And now we need to make the next step. You know, it's totally different around here in a great way. I mean, it, you know, season tickets are up. There's great enthusiasm for what we're doing. You know, guys are, they can walk across campus and they feel that love, which is a lot of fun. But we got to understand that, you know, with all that comes great expectations. So we've got to be extremely, extremely hungry to get going again.
Now, the season before last, you were 8-23. What was the lowest part of that rebuilding process?
You know, it was really hard because to go through that, you know, you had an interim AD in Beth Getz, who's as good as it gets, in my opinion. She's awesome, but she didn't know where she was going to be and everything. You know, so you didn't have an administration that could tell you just to relax. You know, you've got time, do it the right way, which we had always talked about. So that was challenging. You know, and when you lose, people are going to be tough on you, and they should be. That's sports. That's the way it is. So that was hard. But I thought the best job we did was keeping our players, you know, positive, keeping them together. You know, I think the best thing that we did was not necessarily this year. It was keeping that locker room intact. You know, we didn't have mass transfers. We didn't have staff shakeups or anything like that. We just kept going about our business and really, really tried hard not to let all the negative noise impact the way we went about our jobs.
Well, and that definitely permeated through to this past season because you had a great win at Purdue on New Year's Day, but there was a point that you were 3-6 in league play, and then you reeled off 8 straight victories. Take us into your locker room and take us into practice when you were 3-6 in Big Ten play. What was the message to your team?
Well, it's funny because we started off 3-1, like you said. I think we started off 15-2, and we were ranked, and everything was, you know, it was exciting. And then if, you know, where experience is that factor again, you know, the Big Ten's got sometimes, like every conference, sometimes you have a funky start with the schedule. And, I remember going into the locker room, we had lost 5 straight, and I wanted to shake the tree a little bit and shake it up. And I told, Nate Mason, I said, you know, maybe we need to change starting lineup, do something. And he said, relax, coach, we got it. And I said, well, what do you mean? He's like, we had a players only meeting. And you never know what you get out of that. But he said, we're going to be fine. And we went on to reel off 8 straight. And again, I don't think we do that. And I don't think we stay as composed as we were if we hadn't gone through the year before. So I think we understood that, listen, the schedule, it could balance out. You know, maybe you start with a couple of games on the road. You'll get a couple at home. So our guys were really, really composed and confident. They didn't, you know, it wasn't like a speech that turned it around or anything. We just kept going about our business and tried not to get too low, tried not to get too high, and I think that's how you reel off 8 straight.
Minnesota head coach Richard Pitino joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Gophers, a top 15 team heading into the 2017-18 season. Richard, you earned a 5 seed in the NCAA tournament last March. You drew a very talented Middle Tennessee team and obviously came up short. What was the biggest thing you learned from coaching in the NCAA tournament that you didn't know prior?
Well, credit to them, first and foremost. Very good team, and you hate making excuses with us, but we were banged up. You know, we lost to Keem Springs in the conference tournament. Nate Mason played the whole game hurt. So we didn't have a lot of depth at the guard spot, and it caught up to us at the wrong time, obviously. You know, if we're in it again, I think it'll be good for everybody, you know, for the players. I think that, you know, just that experience piece again, maybe those nerves won't be as big. We started off the game pretty good. You know, I've obviously been in the NCAA tournament as assistant coach. The only real difference that I felt, to be honest with you, the games were longer. The timeouts were longer. You know, so that was probably the only piece that was a little awkward and a little weird. So if we do get back there, maybe we'll be able to, you know, be able to handle that the same, a little bit better if need be. I mean, I think all the media stuff, you know, you deal with, but we're in a major media market, so we have a lot of media to begin with. You know, so if we are fortunate enough to be back, hopefully we can just continue to get better and continue to be prepared for that single elimination tournament.
Now, for you personally, last year was the first time you had led a team to the NCAA tournament. I know, obviously, coaches are always looking ahead and trying to get better and moving forward, but was there any sense of relief? Did you feel any differently, and do you feel any differently now that you have that on your resume?
You know, as a young coach, I always found it hard when I had first got here. You know, like there's certain young coaches who make the NCAA tournament, and they're able to parlay that in recruiting, you know, or whether it's with your fans, media, you know, there's a bit of, okay, he's done that, so now let's see where they can go from there. I didn't have that. Now, I was only at FIU for a year, and we were 3 points away or whatever it may be from making it. You know, so I was very proud of that. I was proud of our first year winning an NIT title, but again, still didn't have that NCAA tournament kind of on our resume to sell in recruiting, sell in the locker room, sell with boosters and media and fans, et cetera. So, sure, it's nice to have it, but at the end of the day, it's, you know, you gotta do it again. You gotta do it better. You know, cause that's what sports is all about. And that's the beauty of just the competition that we deal with every single day. So, you know, because we had such a drastic shift, you know, from 8 wins to whatever it was, 24, it's just kind of funny how fresh being on both sides of it is. And that's good for a coach to keep it all into perspective, because as grateful as I am of, you know, people that come up to you and they support you, or, you know, and all those things, I realize that it could all go the other way quickly. So I guess that kind of keeps me pretty balanced and on edge and just trying to do the best that I possibly can every single day and not necessarily focus on that end result of the NCAA tournament. And, you know, being a young coach, dealing with both ends of it has been good for me.
Well, you obviously had great success prior to Minnesota when you were an assistant at Louisville. You were part of a staff in 2012 that went to the Final Four. I still don't know how many people really understand how talented your roster is in terms of, you know, your starting five. Jordan Murphy, Nate Mason, obviously Amir Coffey are all high-level college players. But I'm curious, since you had that experience as an assistant at Louisville, how would you compare this Minnesota roster to the ones that you had that went far in the NCAA tournament at Louisville?
Well, we've had some good ones, or I was lucky to be a part of some good ones at Louisville and Florida. I think I was on a 4-year stretch of, I think we went to 3 Elite Eights in a Final Four, because I went to 2 at Louisville. I went to 1 at Florida, won the SEC, won the Big East. So very, very talented rosters. I think as a coach, when you're at the highest level, you're trying to build a roster full of talent and experience. And I think we've got both. You know, now it's up to everybody to get better than what they were last year. Like Nate Mason had a really good year. What can you do to improve off of that? Amir Coffey was an all-freshman player. You know, can he now become an all-conference player? Reggie Lynch was all-defense. Can he now become all-conference? Jordan Murphy, Dupree McBrayer. So they were good last year, but where can they go from there? I don't know, you know. And I do think we got a good roster. I do think that we can compete with anybody. You know, but again, I think it's you got to get lucky. You got to stay healthy. And you can't get complacent. You know, you've got to be so hungry. Like last year's team was so easy to coach because it was just us. You know, nobody, and rightfully so, nobody thought we were going to be any good. You know, so I've got to make sure that we continue to have that in our locker room, because that's as big of an advantage as anything else. You know, lack of ego and just being all about the team, that's as good of a strength as a good defense, a good offense. And we had that. So we got to continue to have that going into the season. So it'll be very, very interesting to see how everybody responds to, you know, the preseason accolades, all those things. Because we talked over and over again last year. We were picked 13th. And, you know, nobody liked our team. And we talked about none of that matters, fellas. Let's let it all play out on the court. Well, that's the same thing the other way. All these preseason expectations, none of it matters. It comes down to, can you get better every single day? And whatever's thrown at you, I tell my team every single year, I don't know what's coming. You don't know what's coming. The good teams handle adversity the right way. And the Louisville teams, the Florida teams that I was a part of, those guys were used to being great. And I got to get our guys to get to that point. I got to get our fans, everybody to understand that. And if we can do that, we could have a really good year.
I think this is a good time that to point out that at the 2016 Final Four, I had Minnesota as one of my five teams on the rise entering last season.
Yeah, no, you knew it. So good call there. You know, it's funny actually is we really felt good internally about where we were going last year. It was just very, very difficult because we didn't have a whole lot of equity built up amongst our fans because we had such a bad year the year before that we knew that the only thing we could do was let our play do the talking. But there was really an internal belief that we were going to be a pretty good team because the year before, we were losing a bunch of close games with a really, really young roster. Now, we weren't winning them because, you get judged by wins and losses, but we were really close with a young team. So fortunately, we were able to do that, and we got to try to do it better this year.
You know, Richard, obviously the elephant in the room for you when you first became a head coach was obviously working for your father and the fact that you were such a young head coach. But stylistically and watching your team, especially last year, I think that your style is synonymous with teams that like to score. And obviously people are going to ask you questions about your father, but how much did the time you spent working with Billy Donovan and his ability to be so unique on the offensive side of the floor influence your mindset when you wanted to run your own program and your own system?
Yeah, working for Billy Donovan was, by far the best thing I ever did. And again, I love my father. He is a Hall of Famer, and he's as good as it gets. I don't really coach a whole lot like my father, and everybody thinks I do, but I really don't. There's not a lot of similarities, and that's not a bad thing. I would say that I coach much more similarly to Billy Donovan than I do. And again, if I could ever have a career like either one of them, it would be great. And obviously that's very difficult. But if you do watch our teams play, it's a lot more like the Florida teams with what we run from an X and O standpoint. For whatever reason, working for Coach Donovan, his offense just really appealed to me. A lot of his pick and roll stuff, I loved, and we've taken a lot of that. And I've taken a lot of what my father does at Louisville. But I do think that the best thing I ever did was go and work for Billy Donovan. Had me thinking differently, and it's good, as much as working for my dad was great, being around my family and my mom and everybody and sharing those awesome memories, it was good to do something differently, get out of my comfort zone and learn a totally different way, but also similar because, Billy obviously played for my dad, worked for my dad, but he's got so much offensive creativity that we try to take from it as well. And I do think that I do coach a little bit more like him than my father, and both are obviously terrific. So I try to take as much as I can from both and use what I can for myself as well and what I feel comfortable with. I think young coaches have all got to find, they've got to coach a style and a system that they feel good with. Like my dad plays a lot of matchup zone, and we do a little bit of it, but I just don't feel comfortable coaching it throughout the course of a game. So why coach a way that you don't feel comfortable doing? Doesn't mean it's right or wrong. It's just the way that you've got to be your best self up there, and I try to do that.
Was there a point in time when you were growing up that you decided you wanted to get into the family business? Because I know you're the one sibling or the one child, of your father that has went this route. When was the moment where you decided this is what you were going to do?
Well, it's funny. When I was I was going to Providence College. My dad had quit the Celtics, and I think he had taken the Louisville job. Well, I met Mike Hart, who is a high school coach at one of my dad's camp. I just worked his camps just to get a little extra money, and I liked, working basketball camps over the summer. But I met Mike Hart, and Mike Hart said to me, he said, well, if you're interested in continuing to coach, I've got a high school up in Barrington, Rhode Island. You could be my volunteer assistant. And I said, that'd be fun. Doing that during during college was great for me. And after 2 years, I was like, I really like coaching. High school I like, but maybe I want a little bit more. And I met Tim Welsh, actually, in the summer. And Coach Welsh said to me, he said, why don't you come your junior year and be like a student assistant? You can do video and do all those things. And help out. Why don't you do that? And so, again, I was lucky, much like Mike Hart, I was lucky Coach Welsh gave me an opportunity. And it just kind of snowballed from there. I did 2 years there, and then I remember Bob Walsh, who was an assistant at Providence College, said, "Hey, I know Tom Herrien at College of Charleston. Would you be interested in, you know, being like his ops guy?" And Coach Herrien hired me, and I was lucky to go to a great spot, learn under him, and then Ron Everhart at Northeastern and Duquesne. You know, so you just meet good people, and you try to do your job to the best of your ability. Did I ever think at 30 years old I'd be a head coach in the Big Ten? Absolutely not. I did not. I took the FIU job with the intent of being down there for a while and kind of learning and growing as a coach when nobody paid attention. And, you know, we had a really good year and was able to get a kind of a life-changing, you know, dream job in the Big Ten. So I was really, really lucky as well. And again, when I talked about working for Billy Donovan, I don't get the Minnesota job if I didn't work for Billy Donovan and make that tough decision, because Norwood Teague was the one who had hired two former assistants of Billy's. And that connection is what got my foot in the door here. It just snowballed, and I've been lucky, and I just try to put my head down and do the best I possibly can. And been lucky to be at a place at University of Minnesota. It's a special place, and it's really, really gotten better too. I mean, we're building new facilities, that are going to be some of the best in the country. And it's just continuing to grow and continue to evolve. And I'm happy to be a part of it.
Now, you took a route that a lot of people take, obviously, when they want to get into coaching, and they take jobs that lead to better jobs and make incremental progress. But obviously, you're always going to have the label because of your last name. Why were you not intimidated getting into a field where your father is such an icon and such a giant? Because at a young age, that takes some serious self-confidence.
Well, you just, you deal with that. And again, it's not a knock on media or fans, but you really only deal with that when you're talking to media or fans, because like for me on a daily basis, my concern is my family and my job. And, you know, like this morning I woke up and I got to get two kids, one kid to camp, one kid to daycare. I got to go to work. There's never a time where I'm sitting here thinking about how can I live up to my father? You know, you just don't think that way. You do know that you're going to get those comparisons and you're going to have to answer those questions. And, you know, I don't get offended by it. It just comes with the territory. I mean, there's 99% of great things that have been provided to me because of who my father is. And I'm very, very grateful for those things. I'm not one of those people that acts like I'm not lucky. Like, I know I'm lucky. And extremely grateful for it. And, you know, you get asked a lot of questions about it. Maybe the expectations are raised a little bit because of what your last name is. But again, like, I don't think I'm 30 years old as a head coach of Minnesota if my last name wasn't Patino. I'm not one of those people that tries to act like that. So I'm grateful for it. And I don't try to use it for anything, but I'm fully aware if there's one thing I think I am, it's self-aware, and I try to be that. But I always tell people, you know, last name Patino doesn't get you a win at the Breslin Center at Michigan State, so none of that matters. You just tried like heck to do the best possible job you can do and not necessarily worry about the storylines and the narratives. They are what they are, and that's fine. You know, I don't take it personal. I'm just grateful to have the job that I have.
Well, and obviously you're now, you know, approaching your mid-30s, your father's approaching his mid-60s, but it seems like, at least obviously from the periphery outside Louisville's program, that he's more energized and he's more excited with each season that's upcoming. How much longer could you see him doing this?
People ask me that all the time, and like, I have no idea. It's like, you know, you ask Duke assistants, how long is Coach K going to go? And nobody knows. You know, I think at the end of the day, it's like anything, athletes, coaches, they as long as they still have that fire and that desire to do the things that we all do, they're going to keep doing them. And I know that my father has that. He's got great kids in his program. He's got a really good team. He's got a really good support, you know, so he's had a great situation. So that's kind of, because everybody always speculates about people's futures. You know, it's young coaches. They're going to take this job. Are they going to do this? They're going to do that. At the end of the day, I think all coaches, they want to have great support like I have here at the University of Minnesota. I've got an awesome AD, who's just hand in hand with me at all times. And I know my dad's got the same thing with Tom Jurich. I know that he's got really good players who are really good kids. He loves his staff. So, you know, you keep doing it at a high level that you're doing it and you love it. Do it as long as you possibly can. So it's so hard to always speculate with any of those coaches, the Coach K's, my father, the Jim Boeheim's, the Roy Williams. I see them on the road. They're working their butts off. Obviously, they're terrific coaches. So, you know, they're all so good for our game that I hope they continue to do it for a long time.
And obviously, you're part of the next tier of coaches that are coming up and trying to emulate what you've seen in front of you. And to do that, you're going to have to keep winning. You return a good team again next season. I'm curious, though, of the guys that you are bringing back, which is essentially your whole team, who do you see making the biggest jump?
It's a good question, you know, because one of the reasons why we were good last year was the returners made jumps. Now, I think Amir Coffey and Reggie Lynch obviously impacted the team. Eric Curry, those are some newcomers. But, you know, Nate Mason went from a good player to a first-team all-conference. Murphy went from a good freshman to third-team all-conference. Dupree McBrayer, you know, his shooting numbers drastically improved. So, you know, who's that guy? I don't know. You know, like, I think that Eric Curry was a guy, if you watched our team play, like, he may not get the accolades some of these other guys, like, there's a big jump in him at some point. When that is, I don't know. And, you know, I think Jordan Murphy, I think he's got another gear to him. And even Reggie Lynch. Like, Reggie Lynch was Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year last year, but we didn't really work with him much in the summer. He was injured his sit-out year. He had surgery. So I'm excited about really, really, you know, we've taken the summer with him in the fall and seeing that next gear and where that can go. So we'll be a good team if guys, individuals, make those jumps, much like the past team did. So it's exciting to see. I'm not sure exactly who that'll be, but I'm looking forward to seeing who separates themselves.
Final thing for me, you return a veteran team with a lot of double-figure scores back, and when you look at the state of the Big Ten right now, Indiana, Ohio State, and Wisconsin all appear to be in transition from a personnel standpoint. You have become a major game on opponent schedules. How much is the timing of this thing paramount for you and your team, considering what's going on the rest of the league in terms of competing for a league championship, something that doesn't always happen at Minnesota?
Well, you take a job at this level because you want to compete at the highest level and you want to compete for conference championships. You know, everybody asks about Final Fours and NCAA tournaments. I don't think coaches necessarily think about that as much as they think about their league and how can you put yourself in a position to win your league. And obviously we know it's extremely difficult. But we were an NCAA tournament team. We had a terrific year last year, one of the better years in school history, and we got a lot of guys back. So there's no reason to not dream of doing that. It's the same ingredients as before, though. You know, you got to win at home. You got to steal some on the road. And just because people think we're going to be good doesn't necessarily mean we're going to be good. You know, so you got to get everybody to understand that, that every single team is significantly different. And I don't know what the challenges are that lie ahead, but I'm looking forward to it, and we'll see where it goes from there. And just try to get better every single day, keep these guys humble, hungry, and continue to improve.
Well, Coach, we appreciate a couple minutes. Know how busy you are. Best of luck on the road finishing up July recruiting, and hopefully we'll talk to you as we get closer to the season.
All right. Thanks for having me.
We'd like to thank Minnesota head coach Richard Pitino for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. I want to remind you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein on iTunes. We want to be your Bible for the college basketball season and beyond. Once again, we are the only college basketball podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also, want you to check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a review. Let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And today's episode of the College Hoops Today podcast podcast is brought to you by Geico. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. Geico has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money. And time now for our social media portion of the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Send me your questions on Twitter. I will get to them later in the show. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. And right now, we are going to take our first question right now from James Mahoney. And it's, John, who carries the scoring load for Maryland? Are they still a top three team in the conference? And for me right now, I think, James, you have to look at Kevin Huerter taking a major step forward, a guy that had a really big role, okay, last season for Maryland as a freshman. I think you'll see Kevin Huerter play his way to the all-Big Ten level as a sophomore in 17-18. I think that's something to keep an eye on. I expect big jumps for Huerter and also Justin Jackson. And after taking in some games with the college kids last week at Under Armour All-American Camp in Philadelphia, I can tell you Anthony Cowan is another guy that should take another major step forwards. And our next question comes from Dan DeMonte. And it's, John, how many wins is realistic for Penn State looking at their Big Ten schedule? And Dan, look, I think Penn State right now is a team that has a chance to make a real jump under Pat Chambers. You know, you look really at Penn State this year in terms of their roster. They have a roster that can match up with any Big Ten team, I think, other than Michigan State. You've got Tony Carr, an all-league player at point guard. Shep Garner's a good veteran off the ball. Josh Reeves, Lamar Stevens, and Mike Watkins up front. That's a team right now that if Penn State's ever going to have a breakthrough and compete for the NCAA tournament or make the NIT, this is the type of roster that you need to have. And now let's get into some of our news and notes around the Big Ten, starting with some power rankings.
John's Big Ten Power Rankings.
Michigan State, obviously 1, Minnesota 2, Northwestern 3, Purdue in at 4, Iowa at 5. Really like what Fran McCaffrey is doing again at Iowa. This team could be maybe his deepest yet. Maryland 6, Michigan 7, Wisconsin at 8, Penn State at 9, Illinois, Indiana, and then Nebraska 10, 11, 12, Ohio State 13, Rutgers 14. Time now for the Big Ten preseason first team.
John's Big Ten preseason first team.
Bryant McIntosh from Northwestern, obviously on the list. Nate Mason from Minnesota. Tony Carr from Penn State. Miles Bridges from Michigan State. And then Ethan Happ from Wisconsin. Which one of those five is the Big Ten preseason player of the year? Let's find out now.
John's Big Ten preseason player of the year.
Miles Bridges from Michigan State to me is the choice. It's going to be interesting to see how Bridges performs at the three. Tom Izzo said one of obviously the caveats of Miles coming back to school was him playing the three, because that's what he was going to play at the next level. Played a lot of four last year, but Miles Bridges to me, the player that I expect to not just be the Big Ten player of the year, but also challenge for National Player of the Year. And then in this Big Ten league next year, who's the sleeper?
John's Big Ten sleeper.
I'm going with Penn State. I think Penn State proved last year its capabilities when it beat Maryland, when it beat Michigan State at the Palestra, and it also beat Minnesota. I think Penn State, a year older, if it can get mileage out of its bench, has a chance to be a team that makes a jump under Pat Chambers. Now, what freshman should we watch?
John's freshman to watch in the Big Ten.
Got 15 for you right here. Jaren Jackson, Xavier Tillman from Michigan State, 3 from Michigan, Jordan Poole, Eli Brooks, and Isaiah Livers, Caleb Weston and Kyle Young for Ohio State. Two guys, obviously, that should get major roles right away under Chris Holtman. Nojel Eastern from Purdue, Nate Ruvers from Wisconsin, Mark Smith from Illinois, Bruno Fernando from Maryland, Luca Garza from Iowa. Hearing Luca Garza might have a chance to start as a freshman for Iowa. Isaiah Washington from Minnesota, Thomas Allen from Nebraska, the sharpshooter, and Al Durham from Indiana. Those are some impact freshmen. What about some impact transfers?
John's transfers to watch in the Big Ten.
Jerron Simmons, the fifth-year transfer from Ohio from Michigan, will be, I think, an integral role for Michigan. And I've got two for Nebraska, James Palmer and Isaac Copeland, and then Charles Matthews from Michigan, obviously the transfer from Kentucky, and then Mark Allstork from Wright State, a guy who should have a chance to start for Illinois. Now time for some breakout guys.
John's Big Ten breakout players for next season.
Cassius Winston from Michigan State, Demetri Trice from Wisconsin. Laron Black, I think, will take a big step forward under Brad Underwood. Jawan Morgan for Indiana. Jordy Shamanga from Nebraska. Josh Reeves from Penn State. C.J. Jackson, who should obviously get major time right away for Ohio State, you know, because of what they're lacking in the backcourt. Aaron Falzone for Northwestern. And Eric Curry from Minnesota. And Isaiah Moss from Iowa. Those are my 10 breakout guys for the Big Ten next season. We'd like to thank Minnesota head coach Richard Pitino for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. We will be back next week, same bat time, same bat channel, as we preview the SEC. This was the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein.